That sounds good, Brandon. Thanks.
All right, everyone, welcome to our monthly managed care call with our representatives from Amerigroup. Today is September 9th again. And just as a review, like I normally do before all of our calls, I'd like to go over some of the informational letters that we have in past calls, or that we've had in the past month, I should say. So this will be a repeat for anyone who is on our Iowa Total Care call. But we did have a few come through. Most of them are in regards to revised extensions to cost report due dates. Information letter 2155 came out at the beginning of August, and it extended the cost report due date for our 12/31/19 year ends to the end of August 8/31. So that day has passed. So hopefully some of you were able to utilize that. And then a second one that I wanted to point out quick was an extension, which is information letter 2165, and it extending the cost report due date for several different provider types, community mental health centers, home and community-based services, EPSDT, private duty nursing, / personal care, ICFIDs, and nursing facilities. So I do know that our nursing facilities for our 6/30 fiscal year ends would normally have that due at the end of November. That is now due at the end of January 2021. HCBS, normally due at the end of September, is now due at the end of November 2020. EPSDT, normally due at the end of November, has also been extended to the end of January 2021. That was released on September 4th. Again, 2165, if you want to look at the extensions for providers who had a fiscal year end of 6/30/2020. So that, I think, pretty much covers the informational letters that would be applicable to this group. I will also just throw out there, since I forgot on the last call, informational letter 2149, which is grants for HCBS waiver providers that are available through the Department of Human Services. This is, again, information IL-2149, grants available for HCBS providers who had claims in state fiscal year 2019. You would be eligible to apply for a grant through the state of Iowa, which is funded through some CARES Act money. About $30 million is eligible for grants to providers. I do know that they've been sending those out to those who have applied. In that information letter, it does have a link to the application. It can all be done online. I would also like to say that is due September 11th. So you need to get your request in now if you'd like to apply for a grant from the Iowa Department of Human Services. So again, that is for HCBS, substance use disorder, and mental health providers are the three. So for our groups, that's mostly going to be your home and community-based service waiver providers. So check that out, 2149, due September 11th if you want to apply. After having said all that, I would like to provide the opportunity for Amerigroup to make any opening comments, if you guys have any. I don't know if John's been able to join us yet or not.
I'm John McCauley here. I'm just checking my audio. Am I coming across?
Yep, I can hear you. Thanks.
All right, great. I'll start, and then I know Julie and Donna are on for sure, probably Danielle. I haven't checked in yet. Our COVID response obviously is continuing. We're administering CARES Act funds according to the guidance that we've developed and or received from federal and state partners. I note that all of the questions that were pre-submitted today that we'll go over after these opening remarks have to do with processing the CRR payments. We are still deeply involved with the derecho relief efforts in targeted counties, and are tracking very closely with the presidential declarations as it relates to individual assistance programs, and working with our state partner to push information out to members and community groups about how the application process moves. We're still, you know, at a 1% work from home environment. That means our community-based case managers are still largely using telephonic and Zoom technologies to interact with members and providers. But on all the LTSS side, you know, we are continuing to meet the state requirements on turnaround times and report that in to our IME partners on a weekly basis. We continue to track on the expanded benefits that continue as it relates to the COVID and national disaster declaration and state extensions. So additional chore services, additional home delivered meals, and so forth. So a lot of, you know, continued ongoing work. We, you know, don't know that there is a predicted end to any of this. So it's our new normal. And, you know, have continued to morph to that new adjustment, just like everybody else on this call. I'll pause there, see if there's anything that Donna or Danielle or Julie would like to contribute in terms of opening remarks.
I don't have anything, John.
Nothing for me, John. You covered it. Thank you.
Okay. Let's double check. Is Danielle on the call?
John, I've not heard from Danielle. I know Angela's on, and Donna and Julie from.
Okay. Angela, well, you may end up having to take the home health questions for Danielle. So, okay, that's all I have for opening remarks. I'll pause there and see if there is anything, Brandon, you wanted to get to.
Okay. Well, thanks for the remarks, John. I appreciate that. For our members, you know, as we're going throughout the call, you can enter your questions in the chat. And ideally, if you can send it to everybody in the chat that is helpful, then the MCO reps can be monitoring that as well and be seeking answers or be thinking about answers as you submit those. We do have a few questions, and most of them, actually all of them, that I've gotten ahead of time for Amerigroup is related to the COVID relief rate, which we discussed in length with our Iowa Total Care group before. But for our COVID relief rate, we're just looking for some kind of nuts and bolts descriptions on how this should be submitted on the UB04. I know that this has been on previous calls. We have had some providers who have submitted some claims that ended up being just paid at the normal rate after following advice. So I'm just looking, I guess, maybe to re-go over how Amerigroup would like that to look on the claims from our members or from nursing facilities for the COVID relief rate.
John, I don't know if you were going to take the lead on this one or if you're talking on mute.
Yeah, I was talking on mute. Sorry. What I was going to do is just read through the responses to the direct questions that were submitted. and see if there were any follow-ups. You know, Julie, if you wanted to add anything more. You know, our operations team took a look at the questions and provided us with some guidance. I don't, and maybe just as well to go through that step by step, and then you know, pick up any other questions that arise as a result of hearing that. I think the first one is there a separate claim only for the $300 a day? And our ops folks said it does not and should not be a separate claim from the standard room and board charge for the member for the month. The next question, do you want a different revenue code for the $300 relief payment? And the response is providers will not need a different revenue code for the CRR claims to process. Our system is set up to allow the additional payment to pay up to the billed charges. There's more we could elaborate on there, but I'll do the highlight on that one. And if we need to go a little bit deeper on that one, we can. The next question is, do we need to cancel the claim for the days we have received payment for at the Medicaid rate, then bill the Medicaid rate plus 300 per the add-on? And the response is, no, you do not need to cancel or void the claim, but rather a corrected claim is required, and just referring to the guidance that I just provided in 1B. Will by default be paid for 10 consecutive days just by placing the individual in a nursing facility or hospice claim? And so if you bill the respective additional 300 per diem charge on those 10 days, yes, you would be reimbursed. And I think that the state FAQ further clarifies that it's 10 consecutive days. I'll put this in the chat box. The state IME does have a frequently asked questions document. It's a living, breathing document. It's updated almost every day, and I know we've talked about it on previous calls, but I'll drop that link into the chat box just to refresh everybody. And on the off chance that perhaps there are people on the call that, you know, missed some Zoom meetings in the past and haven't seen that. And there's some very specific stuff on the COVID relief rates for nursing facilities. How should this look for hospice? And our ops folks do not believe that this was extended to hospice room and board. And we did not configure for this revenue code, specific revenue code 0658. So if there's additional information that folks would like to provide us on to take that back to our ops folks, we're definitely open to that. All right. I was on a different page while I was reading that. So while I transition over to the chat box, Brandon, let me pause first and see if Julie or Donna or Angela have anything that they want to add to the responses that I've provided so far.
So, this is Donna, and I do not.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Julie. I do not, other than to say there might have been different guidance sent out initially before this was all ironed out. So if that's a question from providers, the directions today came directly from the operations people once we kind of got it all configured. So I did not realize initially that, I think originally we might have told some providers that if they just used the modifier on the days that it applied to, that would work. And that obviously is not true. So I just clarify that up from the beginning. That basically it's the additional payment that will indicate the days that you are able to bill for, if that makes sense.
Thanks for that, Julie. I do know that when putting the DR condition code on the disaster related condition code on the claims, it puts it at like the entire claim level. So it's not actually indicating which days should actually be receiving the enhanced rate. So I don't know how Amerigroup would know which days the added $300 would be applied to. So I guess is what we need to do. Do we need to just have separate claim lines? So say days 1 through 10, they are just normal ICF or just normal in the facility custodial care. And then days 11 through 20, if they are utilizing that disaster related COVID relief rate, they should have that dollar amount reflect the added 300 to their normal daily rate. And then after the 10 days or a negative test, they then go back to the normal room and board rate. So it would be reflected as a total difference on the claim or a total claim amount. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, the only other suggestion that they gave, I think that would work, Brandon, answer. And the only other suggestion that they also could put a claim note, just to identify, you know, the 3rd through the 13th or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. It's not going to identify the individual days.
Okay.
So it's either line by line or in the note box, but there's not an edit in place to prevent it from paying if they bill the appropriate charges, if that makes sense.
In regards to the hospice question, within that DHS FAQ document that you linked there, John, it does talk about a hospice Medicaid resident who, if they are positive or pending test results, that they would qualify for the additional COVID relief rate. So I don't know, I'm not sure what needs to be done to possibly add that to those claims that would be affected for this.
Brandon, this is Julie, and I'm just not, I haven't looked at the actual, the letter about, so what you're saying is if a member is in hospice due to COVID, then the hospice provider would, I mean, basically the nursing home would get that extra $300 and then the hospice provider would still get 95% of that add-on. Is that right?
So how, I guess I'm not, I don't know that they are hospice because of COVID, but they could have gotten COVID while receiving hospice care or vice versa, I guess.
It's irrelevant how they ended up in hospice. But
right. But as long as they are receiving their care within a nursing facility and are required to be moved to isolation because they tested positive or are being symptomatic and waiting for results, the hospice would bill that 95% of their room and board plus the $300 a day, and then that would be passed on to the nursing facility.
Okay.
Any of those hospice payments, they're all passed on. It's just a pass-through payment from the hospice.
Right. Right. So. Yep. I mean, that makes sense. So let me we'll get back with you on that.
Okay. Yeah,
and clarify.
I wish that they listed numbers within the DHS FAQ document, but they don't. But if you go to that page and hit Control F and type in the word hospice, It does come up there. There's a question at the bottom for that. So
I am doing that right now. So thanks.
Awesome.
There it is. Thank you.
Yep. So looking through here, that I think we talked about that one, Kristen's question there. The hospice care moved to isolation. Cool. So yeah, looks like you found that one. So we'll go to the next one there. If we bill a flat rate above our reimbursement rate and we put the DR on the claim, even though we only add the 300 to certain days, won't the others come back and pay at the billed rate? That is a good question, Krista. What I don't know, and I'm definitely not a claim submission expert, and I don't do it all the time like many of you do. If you put the first 10 days as at their normal contracted rate, well, I guess what you're saying is if all your days are billed at $600 a day, how will it know which days to apply the relief rate add-on to? And I don't know if Julie had mentioned some kind of claim note, I suppose, to indicate which days would get that.
Yeah, Brandon. Well, and it's going to be so if you're, you know, if you bill the month, let's just say it's $100 a day, you bill for $3,000, and then you would add that additional, sorry, I'm not doing math very well, so the $300 a day for the 10 days, then the total, your total for that month would equal the 10 extra days. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that
so
makes
we,
sense.
So we would.
I think what Chris is saying is most of our providers, they don't bill the actual Medicaid rate because of instances where, you know, like rebates or whatever, they bill above that, so that way they don't have to rebill it again. And so it wouldn't be able to identify which days, because if they just bill you $500 a day for every single day and then it just defaults to the contract rate, there won't be a way of identifying which days would get the COVID relief rate because they all would be billed at that higher amount.
Valid question that we don't have an answer to today.
Okay. Yes. I think,
sorry.
No, and I think these are questions that I am working with IME on trying to get some specific guidance on how this should be billed. The hard part is that Amerigroup and Iowa Total Care you guys have different billing systems. You have different billing software. And so you both want to see it different ways. So that's what I'm kind of trying to work with them on, but obviously trying to work with each of the MCOs as well to get some specifics on how you want that to look. So I don't know. Should I work with you, Julie, on that? Do you want me to work with John or on how we should get that going or how we should get that to flow?
Include both of us. And we'll, between the two of us, we'll work with our operations team to just firm up specific guidelines for Amerigroup.
Okay. I'm reading Jules' question here. I think it's clarifying that question about the if they can bill it, kind of how I said there, but with the note of the added rate being applied to specific days. I think at this point we're kind of unsure on how that should look for Amerigroup. I don't know if that's fair to say. I guess what were you going to say, Julie?
The only guidance that we got prior to this call was about putting it in the comment box about what days. But I've been chatting with someone while we're on the call. So I think we just need to pause until we get back with you, because I don't want to give out one direction. And if, you know, that doesn't work, that just causes more problems. So, let us get back to you with a little more, definitive guidance.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we're kind of, I don't know if speculating is the right word or not for this, but we're just kind of throwing out scenarios here and identifying areas where there could be problems, I suppose, in the billing process. So let's punt this. I don't really want to punt it until the next call, because that's obviously a month away. But if we could get some guidance here over the next week or two to be able to provide, that would be the most helpful. Because the FAQ, while it does provide some information, it doesn't provide it all. And so what we're really needing right now is the specifics on how a claim should look, because this is such a unique situation. It's going to be difficult, I think, on both ends to get it through.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely we'll make this a priority to get it figured out, because, you know, we want to get moving on it too, but right. And make it work right the first time. So
absolutely. Cool. Going into the chat still, this is for home health. They're still getting denials for missing explanation of benefits. Keep saying it's going to be fixed. They notice the trend that they're denying the higher dollar amount claims for this reason. Seems as if the holding back payments on purchase so they don't have to pay our high claims timely. Has anyone else noticed this trend? Any comments, I suppose, on the explanation of benefits denials? And because I know that with the AmeriGroup we were having, especially for our home health members, changes in processes regarding that XB modifier or using that diagnosis code Z76.89 that had kind of been clunky, the whole process from when it was changed. So any feedback on that, or what providers need to be doing differently, if anything, to ensure that their claims are paying timely and correctly the first time?
So we don't have a date for when that final fix is coming through yet. I mean, really, it's the same answer. You know, the denials are manually processed. We've increased we are continually providing education. At this point, you have to appeal yourself or go to Danielle. I mean, it's the same message every month. So I apologize for that.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we can, I know we're obviously working on it, but it's been several months since that guidance came out on how they should be applying that diagnosis code. So I don't know why it's taking so long to get that finalized fix in place, I suppose.
What we're trying to do is a permanent solution that will auto adjudicate claims and get away from the manual processing. And I can't explain that either. It's IT people working behind the scenes. But that's the delay, or that's what we're waiting for. We would have liked it to have happened a long time ago as well. So, and I'm sure we have an updated estimation, you know, like when they're testing it again. I just don't have that at my fingertips. I can see if I can find that while we're still on the call.
Okay. That would be appreciated. Thanks, Julie.
Yeah.
We have a comment here, or a question. about problems with Availity either not working or moving very slow, and providers have had to start faxing in some of their requests. And I have gotten, you know, intermittently I get some questions about Availity being down or comments about it. Is this, I don't know what the question would be, is this a known problem that Availity not work or not work very quickly recently?
This is Julie again. Not to my knowledge, I think, I know, I think it's just, there are times when it's going to work and times when it doesn't. I mean, I think that's just a computer buggy thing. I've not had anything like, you know, a global where we've gotten notification that it's not working at all, if that's the question.
Okay.
I think sometimes it's more successful than others, unfortunately.
And I guess I kind of understand that. I just, what's hard is when providers are relying upon some of those systems to submit authorizations in order, which then depend upon them being able to get paid for the services that they're providing. A reliable system would be the most ideal for them to be able to submit. And I obviously the fax is available, but I think part of transitions and, you know, moving forward, we're trying to get away from a lot of the paper stuff and going to electronic. And so we just need to make sure that the electronic stuff is working as much as we can. So.
And I would just say, Brandon, as always, I mean, the first step is if you're having issues, the providers are experiencing issues, is contact the Availity help desk, because they're the ones that know about any technical issues or any, you know, if there's some system-wide thing that they're experiencing that day, that's your first point of contact for sure.
Cool. The question
this is Peyton from Virginia Gay, and I'm sorry to interrupt. I called Amerigroup last week because Availity wasn't showing me the correct information or the same information as the remittances, and they told me that it was like a known issue where it was either pulling incorrect denials on the portal, or it was just showing that claims paid zero even though they had processed, but they did not have an ETA at that time for when it would be corrected.
All right. Thanks, Peyton. So it sounds like at least the feedback that she's received indicates that there was some kind of a known issue, and it could be specific to her situation, but I guess it could expand beyond that. This is a home health question. Is it true that the first visit does not require an authorization? If so, does this only apply to initial start of care or each recert period as well? I think what we're talking about here is there are five visits that are available at the start of care for somebody, as long as they have not been used by another provider within that. And I'm going to need clarification here if it's within that calendar year. But there are visits that at the start of care that you can use that do not require an authorization, at least a pre-authorization. Now, what I would say is those five visits after you provide them at the start of care, you would want to include them in your authorization request for that month, even though they've already been provided. I remember seeing a provider update from Amerigroup that indicated that you still want to include those in your request when you make that, but the first five should not require it, as long as they have not been used by another provider, which is something that you would need to check ahead of time before assuming that those five visits are available. Did I say anything incorrectly there, Julie?
I believe it's in the past 90 days.
Okay, 90 days. Oh, Dawn, sorry. Donna, I should ask you. Sorry.
It's Angela, but that's okay.
Oh, Angela. Well, Angela, too. This question, why are we having to appeal denials that are not our error for the missing explanation of benefits denial?
Is that in regard to home health? Or in general?
I think it's probably in general. I guess I don't know. I think the answer would be the same for either provider.
And I'll tell you my first response. I mean, the home health I totally get, you know, if there's a lot. But in general, it's faster, typically, if you appeal yourself, assuming that it's the appeal goes through correctly. But, I mean, we have so much attention on other insurance, depending on what type of service it is, you know, if it's one of those known issues. Ideally, and I know it doesn't always happen, but the appeal is a quicker route than going through your rep. That's the short answer. You definitely don't have to do it twice, you know, if, again, but that's a known issue. And I know you all have Danielle's number for the home health stuff. But
yeah, and I do know that it is an issue for all provider types of ours anyways. Still receive some of those denials. And then obviously if you're doing billing for a lot of providers, you end up seeing a lot of those denials then that need to be fixed. And especially on something that is billed properly the first time and the denial that shouldn't be received.
Yeah, and you appeal one claim and then indicate the rest of the claims in that one appeal. And again, that should be faster. And if that doesn't work, you know, we still can intervene with what the provider submitted, if that makes sense. Like, we don't have to do it over. If providers try to appeal their claim, they attach the additional claims that are involved, you know, just say these are all denied for other insurance when they're not supposed to be. And if that isn't successful, if you reach out to your PR rep, we can go back to that team and call that out immediately.
Okay.
And again, that, you know, just trying to get the quickest way to resolution, because we understand that that denial is very old and very frustrating for everybody. So.
Yes. I think it's just a comment here about the visits without an auth and having troubles knowing if they've been used or not. So this agency says that they don't use them because they don't know if the previous agency has. I guess maybe a question for that would be, who should they reach out to find out if those have been used by another agency? Is there anyone that they can talk to at Amerigroup to know if they have been? Because a lot of times, obviously you could call the previous provider, but I think most of the time they don't know if they were serviced by another agency beforehand, or the member doesn't tell them that they were receiving services by someone else. So there's just uncertainty, I suppose, and risk involved if you decide to use them without having clear guidance that they have or have not been used. So it doesn't sound like I'm hearing someone who could be asked if those have or have not been used by another agency.
I don't know if they could call claims and ask. I guess Danielle would probably be a better person to answer that question.
Okay. This question here is asking for consideration of a monthly sweep of claims with that error, which I think is referencing the EOB denial. That's a good suggestion, Janet. I guess one question that I would have as well in addition to that is, I'm sure that there are probably some payments that maybe get that denial appropriately. Not for like nursing home room and board, I wouldn't think. I'm not sure a situation in which another insurance would be covering that. But I don't know if anyone from Amerigroup has a comment on some kind of sweeps of claims. Yeah.
We are doing, we are doing claim sweeps on the home health denials.
Right. Yep. No, that is true. Yeah, that is true. I think Jane is probably referring to the nursing home, nursing facility side.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, we're not doing that. That surprises me that there's that much volume, I guess, still with nursing homes. That is news to me.
Well, and even if it's, 10% of claims that get that, but when you're billing for, 100 people, that's 10 claims that need reworked and having to go through the appeals process. And then I guess even reading the next comment in here is they've appealed when they were denied for no EOB and that denial was upheld, which definitely doesn't make sense. So
I don't have the chat up. I'm sorry. And those are nursing facility claims.
Yes. Yeah. So it just like we said, and it's been lingering. Obviously, we've known about it for both providers. It's been a larger problem for home health for sure because they were receiving larger numbers of denials. But it's still kind of lingered for all of our provider types. That it's just, especially when you are appealing and then receiving denials on your appeal, makes it even more difficult to do.
Yep. No, I totally get that for sure.
Still flipping through the chat here. Just a suggestion or a comment, I guess, and when looking at claims processing internally, are there people who work specifically for institutional claims and those who work like home health specific or medical claims? Are there any, I guess, or are your claims people all working all claims and so then they don't understand the intricacies of each provider type?
I mean, yeah, there's no way to divvy up claims by type as they come in. So no, in answer to that question.
Okay. There's been a couple of comments in regards to what you said about if you have a claim denial and then you have all the other claims that are having the same, typically it's only the first claim that is being disputed that has worked. The remaining claims that are also submitted are typically not worked or fixed when they're submitted that way.
And please contact your PRF as soon as that happens, because we have ongoing meetings and conversations with the dispute teams about that exact issue. So as many examples as we can send back to get that better. That is absolutely a very frustrating thing that we have. So if the provider can just shoot the PR rep there, typically it's an REQ number, whatever the number is for that the appeal that happened to, we will shoot that back to the claims team immediately.
Okay. And so it sounds like they should be reprocessed, the entire grouping of claims that are submitted with that appeal. So like Julie said, reach out to that PR rep.
That is absolutely the expectation, yes.
Cool. This provider is talking about claims that they've received overpayments on and have reached out to customer service to tell them about the overpayments. Now the refund requests are starting to come through, but most of them are not correct. They sent disputes, and then after many weeks, they get to notice that since they've not received her payment or dispute, that they will be taking them back on future claims. They tried working with cost containment, have left message, nobody answers. But basically what it sounds like is there are overpayments, but the amount that is being indicated on the recoupment request is not correct. And so now they're trying to recoup that incorrect amount. I'm assuming probably more than what the provider has identified as being an overpayment. So is there a contact person or representative that could, that works overpayments that this provider could work with? Or should it just be their provider rep, or I guess how should that flow?
Yep. If you have attempted to contact, typically there's a name or at least a number on a recoupment letter that members or providers receive. If that has been unsuccessful, you can contact your PR rep, and we have an internal contact. But the best is the project number or the affected claims that you're getting notice on, and then we can have that reviewed.
Cool. Thanks, Julie. And then it looks like there are a couple more comments about providers having received coordination of benefits or Medicare EOB denials for other insurance. So, and it looks like most of those are probably multis who would be seeing it for multiple different facilities, and then having a cumulative larger volume than just, you know, one a month. But either way, they are still incorrectly denied. So, reading our last comment that we have in here. Is this something that could be identified more in depth on the configuration log that's posted by Amerigroup? Because it is lingering and continues to linger, and, you know, added costs are associated with having to do all those appeals, those unnecessary appeals every month. I guess we just need some kind of a fix, I guess, to ensure that we're not having to duplicate work. And then, because then obviously someone at Amerigroup has to review that as well, which is unnecessary. I think that probably some kind of an EOB log or something on the configuration log regarding EOBs needs to be addressed, so that way we can ensure that they're paid correctly the first time without incorrect denials.
We can talk to the operations people. I'm not sure how that works, or, you know, how that is run. So we'd have to take that back to operations.
Okay. It's kind of what I see in chat. I don't think I have anything in my email either. Not at this point. I see some of the frustration in the chat on the EOBs. So we'll work this to try to get some kind of a fix or a resolution in place. Obviously, like Janet said, it's been since 2016, and we've still been getting these denials. I think another thing to remember is, you know, prior to managed care, we were receiving some claims that would have denials for things that just would happen, but we knew how to fix them, and they would be fixed. We could do it once, and it would fix the claim every time. What's becoming more difficult, or what has been difficult with this, is we can submit the information and then still receive a denial on it. So I hear you. We'll keep working it. I think I do have a MAC meeting that I can bring up this denial again as well. So we'll keep working it. I know that it's frustrating. So seeing no more other comments or questions in the chat, I do want to thank Julie, John, Donna, and Angela from Amerigroup for joining us on our call and continuing to join us monthly. We do appreciate it. Our next call is, looks like October 14th. And as always, please submit questions ahead of time. They ensure that those individuals who can answer those questions will be available and on the call. And I guess this may not be why, but obviously Danielle wasn't on the call today, but it's partially because none of the questions that were submitted ahead of time had anything to do with home health. So continue to submit your questions ahead of time. We'll get them in the chat, or we'll get them in the message that goes out to the MCOs before the call, so that way we can make sure everyone's on there. Again, thank you all of our members for joining us and everyone from Amerigroup for continuing to join us on our calls. And everyone have a good rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon.